if we don't let our kids fail slowly and surely with smaller errors, then what happens right now is that you have kids who are 18 and 22 and ready to launch, but we see increasingly in our society that they're not.
Your mind can be your most valuable asset or your biggest liability, and you get to choose. This is the Building Psychological Strength podcast, where we explore ways to build resilience, build confidence, and make our minds work in our favor. We draw from the fields of psychology and life design to help us intentionally create a rock-solid mindset upon which a vibrant life experience can be built. My name is April Seifert. I'm a psychologist, a life design strategist, and co-founder of Peak Mind, the Center for Psychological Strength. Each week, I'll introduce you to an expert, a concept, a technique, or a hands-on practice that will help you build psychological strength in your own life. These are the tools to help you thrive. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Building Psychological Strength podcast. I am so thrilled that you're joining me this week because I have an incredible interview in store for you, especially if you are a parent who wants the best for your kids. This week, we are speaking with an amazing woman named Taru Clavel, and she is the author of the brand new book, World Class. And in this book, she does an incredible job of comparing the educational system in the United States with the approach that they take. Now, it was such an interesting conversation because Taru is half Japanese, and so she spent a ton of time growing up inside the Japanese public school system. So to her, some of the things that she saw initially didn't seem that different. She saw that kids were encouraged to fail and try again, that the community and parents rallied around kids who were struggling to help them catch up rather than labeling them as, oh, she's just not good at math. There were so many aspects of what Taru noticed that map over beautifully onto Carol Dweck's concept of growth mindset. And when Taru really started to see how different that educational system was from the educational system that we have in the U.S., she started to see how it could be that a child in the U.S. who's not allowed to fail, who's not allowed to struggle, who's had so many barriers removed for them, and who is labeled as not good at something, so therefore we don't try anymore, how it could easily be so that they fall behind. This is such an interesting conversation because as a parent, I'll be the first to say it is so difficult to watch your kids struggle. It's so hard to watch them quote unquote fail. But if we give them that courage to stand back up and the expectation that you keep trying and you just try again, that failure is not something that defines you as a person. You are not a failure. You're just not quite good at it yet. And that's okay. We are setting themselves up with such an incredible mindset that will serve them for the rest of their life. So this episode is such a powerful one as you think about how you can help your kids develop. But what I would also urge you is think about how this can help you approach failure in your own life as an adult. How do you think about it? How do you think about your concept of what you are and are not good at? And how much work have you put into some of those things that you're not good at? Especially some of the things that you're not good at that you really wish you were, that you think would be really fun to dive into. This is such a great interview and such a great conversation to help people cultivate that mindset, that growth mindset that Carol Dweck's work shows is so incredibly important. And I hope you enjoy this incredible interview with Taru Clavel. Taru, I am so excited to have you on this episode of the podcast. I think this is going to be so much fun. So thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for having me, April.
This is an exciting time. Like, this is a very exciting time because you have a book coming out, which I know we're going to get to and talk a lot about because it aligns so much to, in particular, a couple topics within the field of psychology. But before we get into all of that, can you just give us a little bit of a background on you and who you are?
So I grew up mostly on the East Coast in New York City and Connecticut. And I have three kids. I'm bicultural. So my mom is Japanese and my dad American. And Japanese is my first language. And so in 2006, when I had two children, the opportunity came up for me and my family to go to live in Hong Kong. And at that time, my children were, how old were they? They were about 2 years old and 6 months old. And that led us on this adventure, a 12-year adventure, really, where we spent 4 years in Hong Kong from 2006 until 2010. And in Hong Kong in 2009, my third child was born. And then we went to Shanghai and were there from 2010 until 2012. And then went on to Tokyo from 2012 to 16. And then Palo Alto, California from 16 to 18. And then full circle back to New York City, which is where we left from in 2006.
Amazing. That is like a global whirlwind of travel. That's amazing.
Yeah, I have to say, writing the book was kind of interesting too, because my editor said, we have to tone it down a little bit because we're giving the reader a little bit of whiplash. So yeah.
You're like, hey, if the reader's getting whiplash, imagine what I am, like traveling all over the place and living in all these places.
It's such a fun, it's a good point, because I definitely felt it when I was reading it too. So yeah.
So your book, I'm going to just dive right into it because it is so interesting and I can't wait to hear more about it. Your book really sprung out of this travel and something you learned about the education system of all things. So I'm wondering if you can tell us a little bit about, you know, as we were chatting before we hopped on to record, you had some really interesting things to say about things you were noticing about the educational system in the U.S. and really how that catalyzed some of the travel that you did and what you started to notice as you were abroad. So I'm wondering if you can just sort of set the stage about what you were noticing as your kids were starting to march toward their, you know, initial educational, you know, career.
Yeah, so it really started with when we went to Hong Kong, and typically expatriates, commonly known as expats, enroll their children in international schools. And so, for example, the American school in Hong Kong would teach the U.S. curriculum. But I had one preschooler at the time. My second son was a little too young still to be enrolled in school. We just enrolled him in an international preschool. And what I learned was after about 6 months that wasn't the right fit for my family because I wanted my children to get a full immersion experience. So that's when we started exploring the local public schools. And at that point, it didn't seem that foreign to me because I am half Japanese. And although I was raised in the U.S., most summers I spent in Japan with my family and actually went to school in the public schools of Japan. So I kind of felt like I did it. My kids can do it. It'll be great. And while obviously I wasn't back in Tokyo yet, I was in Hong Kong, Shanghai, and Tokyo thereafter. Something that became very obvious to me was how the systems there really place so much emphasis on effort. It's all about effort. And when I came back to the U.S. in 2016, I was rather gobsmacked to learn that there was this mentality or there could be this belief that you could not be good at something. Oh, she's not good at math. Oh, she's not good at throwing a ball. Or, yeah, she's just a late learner or a late reader. And that never really happened where I was because all the children were expected to learn at very high levels of academic expectations. And the entire community, whether it be the teacher, the parent, the student, and all of the surrounding counselors, tutors, grandparents, would get involved to make sure those students, every student can meet those learning expectations. And it was really all about effort and that growth mindset.
So in the international schools where they were teaching a U.S. curriculum and in the schools in the United States, and you hear this all the time, and we don't bat an eye. We don't even register that we're saying it. you hear, oh, she's not good at math. Oh, he's just not a very good speller. Oh, they're just not great at grammar. They just aren't good at running, whatever it happens to be, whatever skill or thing it is. We say that all the time. And it sounds like that's what you noticed.
That's exactly what it was. And I felt like very much in Shanghai and in Japan, there's so much value placed on failing. And it's okay for kids to struggle. Struggling is part of the growth process. And that's what builds your strength. And I came back to the U.S. really, you know, in this culture right now where helicopter parenting, lawnmower, snowplow, there are all these words for it where there is this fear of letting your child fail and seeing where that may take them, which we have a lot of things going on, obviously, right now in our political and other climate. But that opportunity to give your child the freedom to make mistakes is vital. And that's something that was very, very clear to me when I came back to the United States. And it really was an impetus for me to write the book, World Class, my book, because I realized, wait, there's so many things that we could be improving upon in the United States if we looked at the models that I'd experienced over the previous 10 years.
Something that I feel like we should define really quick, because I think we're going to hit back on this topic over and over again, are these concepts of growth and fixed mindset. So I believe it was Carol Dweck wrote a book called Mindset, where she dives into these two topics. This is actually something that I covered very recently within the Peak Mind membership. We did a very big deep dive and a challenge based on growth mindset. But to give you a little bit of background, folks who are listening to this, Dweck talks about there being two different mindsets. One is fixed mindset. This is the belief that our capabilities, our personality, our abilities are fixed, meaning you're either good at it or you're not. People who have that type of mindset, now that seems like it's not that big of a deal, right? But people who have that type of mindset, failure, which I think we'll probably unpack quite a bit in this episode as well, failure takes on a very specific role. Failure is diagnostic. Failure means, oh, this has revealed that I, as a person, am not good at this thing. So think about what that means in academics. If you fail, if you don't do well in something academic, it means you are not smart. And a fixed mindset person looks at that and says, this is not something that can be changed. This is something about me. So failure becomes not only diagnostic, but it becomes part of that person's identity because it proves that they as a person do not have that ability. Now on the flip side, growth mindset looks at our abilities, our personality, these capabilities as something that can be developed over time with effort. So failure takes on a totally different notion for them because failure is looked at as something that says, oh, okay, I'm just not good at this yet. And the word yet is really important because it indicates there's still an opportunity here. I could get better. I could work on it and I could improve if that's an area that I want to improve in. So I wanted to highlight that because we're going down this interesting path of these two mindsets and what failure means. And it sounds like you saw that as you were sort of straddling the American culture and the Asian culture. Can you talk a little bit about what, maybe like an example of what quote unquote failure looked like in those two cultures?
One of the best examples I can think of is I was actually an education journalist while I was in Tokyo, and I interviewed this remarkable architect, Tezuka, and he designed this award-winning kindergarten called Fuji Kindergarten, and it's nicknamed the donut because it's literally like kind of like a UFO, like a donut, and it's just one story, but the entire roof is like a playground, and they had kids running around it in circles, and they actually timed or they measured how far the kids run. These preschoolers run on a daily basis, and they run 3 miles a day just on that roof. And it's a remarkable sculpture. But he was giving a lecture about child development and his philosophy, because that's a huge part of how he developed the design of his award-winning preschool. And he said, He believes that children should break an arm now or they'll break their heads later. And that's a direct translation. And I have to tell you, there were a lot of non-Japanese members in the audience when he said that at a lecture. And I heard gasps. He goes, what do you mean? You can't do that. You have to protect your child from falling in a playground or getting hurt or any of that. And there's so much truth to what he said, because we want our children to be in a more protected environment so that there are people to look after them, because real life consequences when you're an adult are much harder if you don't have that buildup of resilience that it takes to learn from your failures. So that's one example I love. And another kind of cute example is, and I'll go back to Dweck too. I'm going to kind of go back a little bit more actually. There's a researcher, a phenomenal scholar, I should call him, named Jim Stigler, who's at UCLA. And in the 80s, he went and studied how math is taught in the Japanese classroom. And then he went back and looked at mindset, and he worked with Carol Dweck to develop this whole notion of mindset. So mindset isn't new. It's just become more popular in our zeitgeist recently. But he told this lovely story. And it's about how when he went to go look at the classrooms in Japan, and in particular at this point, he branched out further and he went not only to look at how math was taught, but then he went into the preschools. And there was a child who apparently put on his shoes on the wrong feet. So the right was on the left and the left was on the right. And the teacher saw it and just let the child run off. And Jim said to the student, well, why didn't you fix that for him? And the teacher said, well, the child isn't going to get hurt. And if the child falls, then the child's going to learn that the shoe is on the wrong foot. And that's how they're going to learn. And it's just a great example of how if we don't let our kids fail slowly and surely with smaller errors, then what happens right now is that you have kids who are 18 and 22 and ready to launch. But we see increasingly in our society that they're not. And, you know, there's higher anxiety and stress and depression, and that doesn't even take into account what's happening, you know, in technology and in our popular culture. So I think the gift of failure really is a tremendous gift that we need to maybe be a little more mindful of and impart to our children.
I totally agree. And the analogy that I love using with so many psychological concepts, but this is another great one, is it's a muscle, right? Your ability to fail is a muscle. And imagine going to a gym and somebody gives you a weight that's 5 times heavier than what you can lift today. You're not going to be able to do it. There's just no possible way. You're going to quote unquote fail at lifting that weight. But if you had built up over time, that weight might be something that you can manage. And so as you're making these small, you know, taking these small risks and either failing or learning, or sometimes you might succeed or whatever, but you're fumbling your way through it and kind of figuring it out. Not only do you get better at whatever the task is that you're trying to do, math or whatever, but you psychologically get better at framing that failure in your mind and seeing it for what it is. I'm not good yet. I haven't quite learned this yet. I can't quite do this yet. But still seeing that your ability could be changed over time with effort. And that's not something that we do a very good job of in the U.S. We have a tough time with that in the U.S.
I agree with that. I think the verbiage, right, that we say it's failure, if we could change that to just overcoming challenge. Because that's what life is. It's how many challenges that you accept as challenges and overcome. Because if you're kind of, I think, grappling with or kind of coasting around this whole idea of failure, it's really a really negative mentality. A lot of negative energy there. Something else occurred to me that I should say is I don't want to make it sound like it's really easy as a parent to let your child fail. I mean, that's probably one of the hardest things, at least I struggle with. And in Japan, an example I have is my son, when he was probably about 7 years old. And in Japan, kids are very independent and on their own by the time they're 6 years old. So he was commuting to his after school activities on his own, going to school back and forth on his own. And so he went to soccer practice. And it was actually a pretty significant bike ride for him to go to soccer practice and come back. And it was about 7 at night. And he had a what's called a children's phone in Japan. They have little children's cell phones that have 3 phone numbers you can call out to and maybe 7 that you can receive from. And they're very, very cute. And I get a call from him at 7, and I'm obviously concerned because he's not home yet. And he said, "Mama, I had an accident. I fell on my bike and the chain is broken." And he was at the bottom of a hill. It's a very, very steep hill. And I thought, oh no. So, you know, I get in my car and I go and I'm a little panicked because it's a very, very narrow street too that has a lot of traffic. So I go, I can't find him. And I finally come home and he was home. I said, "What happened?" He said, "Well, I figured it out. I fixed the bike. I fixed the chain. I did this and I did that and I got home." And that was amazing to me because to this day, he's 13 years old. He's obsessed with engineering. His favorite sport is mountain biking. And he gets all into how the gears work. And that couldn't have happened in any better way. But it did cause me panic is what I'm trying to say. But it was a true gift that it even happened. And he was safe.
Oh my gosh. As a mom, I'm just like smiling from ear to ear hearing that because it is difficult to, I'm thinking of my own daughter and she's 3 and a half and she is a very physically embodied little girl. Mm-hmm. She has been climbing well before she could walk and now her sister's doing it. Just send me your good vibes. Oh my gosh. But they both climb well before they could walk. And amazing. What's difficult is sitting on the playground and watching her do it because she's tiny. And yeah. At the time, especially, she was very tiny and she was doing this. And I could see other parents were completely on edge, but she would slip a little bit and she'd catch herself. And she never fell hard. There was always a little bit of slipping. She'd catch herself and she'd learn or she'd adjust her feet and figure it out. She is the most physically embodied, able, capable kid today on the playground. She's so good. But I think it's because she had those little, we'll call them micro failures, that was able to adjust and learn from. And now I'm completely confident with her being there. And so this is like a grander example of that where you just want to cheer for your kid because they figured it out. And that is exactly what you want. You know, that's what you're raising them to do is to figure it out for themselves.
I think that's such a good example because at that age too, they don't know that it's failure. They haven't, nobody's told them, no society's told them, oh, you know, you got an F on climbing or that you fell.
Right. You got an F on climbing.
Right. It's so natural for them to just say, okay, I'm getting back up because I want to get to the top. I want to get to the other side. And that determination is magical. So I commend you too, because it's hard to strike that balance because I remember being at the playground and there are plenty of parents who are just side by side with their kids. And then there are other ones that sit back. And I can tell you, even when I was at a preschool with my daughter, when she was just 2 years old in Shanghai, one mom came to me and she was so funny. She said, "You know, you're always sitting back." I go, "Oh, because my daughter's enjoying herself." And she said something like, "Well, it seems like you're not really paying any attention to her." And I thought, no, I'm just giving her freedom. It's a very safe place. There's padding everywhere. But I remember feeling, you know, somewhat judged, but I was laughing at the same time. And also, she was my third child. I was like, she'll be fine.
You're like, I know how this goes. It's going to be okay. And there's so much research, though, that backs up the ability to let kids especially, but I think this goes for adults as well, but kids especially figure it out and tinker and try. And there's a lot on growth mindset and fixed mindset. So if you're interested in this, or if you have kids, or if you want to know more about this, definitely pick up Dweck's book. Recently, though, there was a book called Range that was published. It's why generalists it's something like Why Generals Succeed in a Specialized World. The author is David Epstein. He talked about a similar concept where people who ultimately become very successful, they're people who were allowed to tinker and try a lot of different things. They didn't worry about the fact that they weren't they didn't have a degree in a particular area. They just thought it was interesting and they studied it. And they didn't worry about how that didn't make them qualified or their initial tries weren't perfect, meaning they failed. right? They didn't mm-hmm. worry about all of that. What they were doing, though, and what this is as adults, what these people were doing, but kids do this beautifully, they are perfect at this, is that they were sampling this wide variety of things. They were gaining experience in a wide variety of things that ultimately, if you allow a kid to do that or allow a person to do that, even adults, the more you allow them to try new things, which they will fail at no matter what, try new things, tinker, try something else, expand your horizons in a new direction, the better able those folks were at some point to synthesize all of that into a new innovation that no one could have seen coming, because it took somebody having experience in all those disparate areas, which they're not quote unquote expert or good at any of them. They just tinkered in all of them. So they got some experience in all of these areas and they put it together and came up with something brilliant. And you don't get that if you stop just because you weren't great right in the beginning. You can't get that type of experience if you just allow yourself to quit at the first sign of failure.
That's such a fascinating thought, for sure. It's getting your hands dirty. It's and letting your hands, letting your children get their hands dirty, you going out there and not being scared to try new things. I feel like I certainly had to do that. Each of our trips, I should say, or not trips, our sojourns to these countries, I was definitely a gung-ho person. Every single time it was, I can't wait to get to Hong Kong. I can't wait to get to Shanghai and Tokyo. But, you know, inevitably there's that excitement, that euphoria, that adrenaline rush when you first get to these places. And then you have this kind of, uh-oh, the reality, that crash. And if you don't know how to kind of cope with that. And there were lots of struggles. I can tell you very honestly that getting to Shanghai was very, very challenging to me in 2010. And getting through all that and putting it all together has definitely made me a much, much stronger person.
I totally can see that. And what's overarching all of this, I think, and it's something that I've touched on in prior episodes of the podcast, but it's worth bringing up here too, is there's a level at which we can operate that represents our true potential, right? The level that we can actually get to. The level that we think our potential is almost always so much lower than that. It's we think we're going to have to quit before we actually need to be able to quit. I interviewed a woman named Sam Basquez. A better host would be able to tell you exactly what episode number hers is. But if you search for Sam Basquez or you search for Skydive, you'll be able to get to her episode. But she talks about how as she was becoming a skydive tunnel instructor, her actual breaking point was so much higher than she ever gave herself credit for. And you only find what that true potential is if you let yourself keep failing and learning from it. Because as you approach where your comfort zone is, you're gonna start to falter a bit. Like, you're gonna start to fail a little bit. And it's an inevitability. It's what you make of that failure that matters. Is that failure, I'm doomed? Is it diagnostic? Or is it a not yet? And if it's a not yet, then keep working. This episode of the Building Psychological Strength podcast is sponsored by the Peak Mind Starter Pack. If you're ready to start building psychological strength, you can get started absolutely free. Begin building psychological strength with a set of hands-on mini modules designed to create massive shifts. Inside the starter pack, you'll get access to three different modules. Module one is the self-identity diagnostic, which will give you an insightful boost in self-awareness. Module number two is life blueprinting, a powerful introduction to the field of life design. And module three is a simple mindset hack that'll help you cut down on unnecessary anxiety, anger, and guilt. Once you're enrolled in the starter pack, you can go at your own pace. And we've made it absolutely free because we want as many people as possible to benefit from this work. Your mind can be your most valuable asset or your biggest liability, and you get to choose. What choice are you making? You have nothing to lose and and mental toughness, resilience, and confidence to gain. Get started for free today by visiting www.peakmindpsychology.com and get enrolled in the Peak Mind Starter Pack. So what I'd love to hear a little bit is, I'm assuming in your book you've got some, and I'm saying I'm assuming because as of the time of this recording, it is not quite out yet. As of the time that this is released, it will have just come out.
Yes.
I'm assuming there are pieces in there that you have some thoughts about what we could do with our educational system to make it more effective in the U.S. I'd love to hear a little bit about what your thoughts are.
That is a huge question, and I'd love everybody to read my book to hear my thoughts on it. The way I thought about my book, and it took me quite some time to figure out the right framework to tell my story, because I talk about different themes, education themes. I talk about my own personal growth, because during this time, I went back and pursued a master's in comparative and international education, and then did become an education journalist while my kids were in the local public schools of these countries and cities where we lived. So it was really, it was challenging to figure out that framework. And ultimately what I came away with were 8 overarching themes that U.S. parents, educators, legislators, teachers can kind of consider. And those include everything from teacher training to parent involvement, education governance, meaning who's making the decisions in our schools and who's paying for them, to the idea of globalization in our schools, and what is this concept of mastery. And so there are 8 overarching subjects, but if I was to say the big takeaway that I would love for parents to consider in the United States in particular, because we are such a diverse country, and that isn't just diversity in our own families, but it's also within the school. So even in the same school, each classroom is completely different because the teachers are so different, and teachers have so much more flexibility to decide what they want to teach that's a part of the curriculum. And so what I guess I'm trying to say is, in China and in Japan, to be educated, that definition of what it means to be educated is very clearly defined because you have a textbook. Nothing is online. No parent is looking online to try to figure out what the kid is learning. And the textbooks are covered cover to cover. Whereas in the U.S., I mean, you can think back on your high school textbook, U.S. history or biology, and, you know, the teacher can decide, today we're going to cover pages 12 through 14, and then next week we're going to do 25 through 30, and then it's like, what happened to the in-between pages, right? But that's completely up to the decision-making of the teacher. Whereas in Japan and in Shanghai, it's not like that. So to get to the question, it's, I would love families to consider their family value and figure out, how do you define what an education is? What is an educated person? And make that a goal and have those conversations with your kids, because it is so amorphous in this country. And what's ended up happening now is, however you want to gauge an educated person, the U.S. academic outcomes for 15-year-olds are 3 years behind those in math, science, and language arts than our children's counterparts in Shanghai and in Japan. And that's 3 years.
That's huge.
And that's tremendous. So you're talking about 15-year-olds in Shanghai doing calculus because their academic standards are already so high. And when, so this is based on the OECD PISA scores, which is the PISA test is an exam that's administered to 15-year-olds all throughout the world. In 70 plus countries and economies, and it's administered every 3 years. And how they define mastery is also interesting. It's not just knowing the content. It's not just knowing what 3 plus 3 is. It's knowing how to apply 3 plus 3 when you're going to the grocery store or when you're telling time or when you're driving your car. It's how to apply the learning, and that's actually mastery. And so I think right now it's, we are so, so diverse, and we're at an inflection point in our history right now where we do have so much divergent thinking going on. So I would want to impart upon parents that they have these conversations with their children on what it means to be educated. Does it mean knowing all about art history, knowing how to paint, knowing how to kick a ball, Does it mean knowing how to bake? Does it mean knowing your math and science and your language arts? Does it mean knowing another language? Does it mean being good at karate or chess? What does it mean? And what does that idea of mastery mean? And how does the notion of failure kick in there? Because if you're telling your kids, just get straight A's, just get straight A's, and they're not, and you're not examining why and why that A is important and how that A is assessed and who's assessing it, then you're also doing your children a disservice. I think it's really about investigating and figuring out what your family prioritizes and practicing and modeling that in your home on a constant basis.
That's at huge. Family time.
Yeah, you know, and it's when you're in the car with them, when you're walking down the street, when you're having family time, when you're putting up the schedules for the day, is there a question of the day? What are you talking about? And how, you know, what are you doing when you spend your time with your kids? Because I'm actually very much against sitting with your kids to doing their homework. They have to do it. And I feel like you're showing them, if you sit with them and you're doing their homework with them, what message are you sending them? That they can't do it on their own? Or that you need to be there? Like, where is your time best spent to support your kids? So these are all conversations that I would love families to be having.
And what I'm hearing is the overarching theme there too, is that, and what I love this more than I can even articulate, and this is just a theme for life, is that what you're saying is be intentional about the environment that you're creating. Be intentional about your role in your child's education and how best you can support the long game of your child's education. And that notion of being intentional, to me, is the opposite of being just a passive participant. You're just a passive person who's going along with whatever forces might be acting on you, whether it's the educational system at hand, whether it's, you know, your kids' friends and things that are going on there. Being intentional about the environment that you can control and set up is really important. And I love that you brought in values. That is a huge piece of this, making sure that you are thinking about what that means, what it means to be educated within your family, and then intentionally setting up an environment that would support that. That across the board, I think people would be so much happier in their lives if they figured out what their values were and intentionally set up an environment to support them. In general, that's like the key to happiness in life. But here, it's the key to helping your kids succeed.
I think, you know, and that's, and helping your children succeed is also, is grounded in your community, right? So who's a part of your community? The teachers, your family, your friends, the crossing guards, everybody, and understanding everybody else's values that influence your children's is also really important, because I have found that often when you have a conflict with someone, or you're not getting along, or your energy doesn't jive, it's usually because you have a difference in values. And if you can get to the core of that, I think that really will support not only yourself, but your family and children as well.
I love it. I love it. Okay, so for people who want to know more about this, they want to read more in depth, give us your full book title. What is it and where can they find it?
Oh, thank you. So my book is called World Class, and you can buy it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, hopefully your independent booksellers, which we should be supporting as much as we can, as of August 20th. And there's going to be a media junket, and I would love for you to all follow me on social media, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn. I'm so open to conversations about children, raising children, educating children, the Comparative International Education Dialogue. I'm open for debate. Anybody who has a differing opinion, I think it's so important to have these conversations as openly and as transparently as possible, so that we really can help the educational outcomes of all of our children. I think that's vital to start building a more inclusive community in our country in particular, and around the world, frankly. I think this is a crucial time right now.
I love it. And before I let you go today, I need to ask you, what does it mean to you to be psychologically strong?
Great question. To me, it's the belief that everything is an opportunity. And even though it may seem daunting or easy or something you don't want to do, or, yeah, I mean, In the school environment, it's so funny, right? So many times you have to go to conferences or meetings, or you have to talk to that one person you don't want to talk to, but it's an opportunity. You're always going to learn from it. So I definitely believe every experience, every person is an opportunity, and embrace it and ask questions and listen and don't be scared to not know something, because that's just another opportunity as well.
That's so good. I really encourage you guys to go out, buy the book, really learn more about how we can support our kids in their educational endeavors. Go out and learn more about fixed and growth mindset. It is such an important set of topics for supporting everything that we've talked about today. Cultivating that mindset that allows you to be open and fail and be okay with it and continue to move on and develop your skills is only going to help both your kids and, frankly, us as adults, because we get a little bit closed down the older we get. So the more we can keep that going as we get older, the better. Thank you so much, Taru, for being here. This has just been such a great conversation, and it just makes me excited for, watching my kids grow up and watching them, learn how to navigate their own little way through the world. So thank you so much for the work you do and for being here today.
Oh, it's been my pleasure. Thank you so much, April.
It's a simple fact that nearly everyone in the world could benefit from building psychological strength, but not everyone will put in the time and effort to do so. But today you did. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Building Psychological Strength. Now, if you're interested in building the mental toughness, confidence, and resilience you need to thrive through life's ups and downs, visit us at www.peakmindpsychology.com. Also, if there's someone in your life who could benefit from this episode, please share it with them. And if you yourself found this episode valuable, meaning if you took away even one insight that you can use to build psychological strength in your own life, we would so appreciate it if you would drop us a rating and a review on iTunes. The thing is, the more ratings and reviews we have, the easier it is to get this powerful and important content out to the people who need to hear it. Remember, your mind can be your most valuable asset or your biggest liability, and you get to choose. So choose wisely, my friend, and I'll see you next time on Building Psychological Strength.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.